Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Coming to you today from the Illinois State Fairgrounds. From Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby September wheat at 692.5. They're up 26 cents today. December futures, 20.5 cents on the gain, $7.11. The settlement price for the soft red winter wheat. And the market, 703, up 17.75. In Kansas City, a 17.5 cent gain for the hard red winter wheat. And the September contract at 672.25. September corns, 327.5. They were down 3.5 today. December futures at 345, down 4 cents. And the March corn at 360.5, down 3.75. December contract at 396.5, down 3.25 for the afternoon. August soybean futures, $8.50. They're down 11. September's 15, lower at 851. And November beans at $8.66, down 15.75. Next year's November's at $8.91.25, down 12.75 for the day. August bean meal futures at $232.80, down $2.80, and the August bean oil at $35.95, down $0.55. At the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle, $115.70. They're up 17.5 cents today. August live cattle at $91, 2.5 cents, 27.5 higher, and the October futures a dime higher this afternoon at $95.15. August lean hogs at $74 even. They finished the day a nickel higher. On the line with us this afternoon to take a complete look at what the futures market did is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd, and greetings to everybody there at the State Fair.
Well, thank you very much. It's a little warm outside, but it is really good here inside our air-conditioned facilities at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. If you're going to do the State Fairgrounds, that's probably the best way to do it. Tell me a little bit about this jump that we saw this afternoon in the wheat market, up 26 cents in the nearby September contract.
Well, of course, we saw a couple of things. There was news that Egypt had a purchase canceled by Syria on the wheat, and they turned around and bought 440 metric ton of U.S. soft red wheat that pushed things sharply higher. That figures out to about 935 to 950 by the time we pay the freight to get to Egypt. So that's some pretty expensive wheat, and they didn't back away, and they come right in and grabbed it up. So that was a pretty spectacular thing, and it kept the market on the high side of things, Todd. We keep hearing talk that a lot of fund managers think the wheat's getting toppy, but, just as we get all those things put in, why we close 692 on the September and a strong 711 over that 710, barrier that we had in the December. So still some strength there, and, we're looking down the road to buy some puts in the wheat, but not quite yet.
Was there much spillover that happened into the corn market? I'm afraid I've been busy during the day and really didn't get a chance to see. I know it finished weak for the day.
The spillover actually, Todd, come when a small fund that traded asked for the CFTC to be able to halt redemptions to some of their customers. It said that this was a small fund that traded mostly financial instruments, interest rates, and junk bonds. It did have a name that was very similar to one of the large hedge funds. And, of course, that was very heavy on a lot of the traders that trade electronically. They were watching MSNBC when that announcement was made, and they fired a lot of orders into the corn and the bean pit. And that's what turned the market around from being the early strength and the bleed over from the wheat. Along with some of the cooler temperatures that our Chicago forecaster showed at noon for the rest of the week. And some of the maps are a little drier over the next 7 days, but we are experiencing, we probably got a quarter of an inch of rain here today, the first in a couple weeks, and that's good. Also, the tropical storm Dean is slowly heading into things, but it looks like it won't hit till August 24th, and it could go over Cuba and slow things down, but yet then bring some moisture on up. So,
kind of interesting, James Barnett on Commodity Week from MF Global had mentioned the idea that if one of these hedge funds, index funds, managed to get in the wrong way of the market and started to liquidate those long positions, that it could have a pretty rough impact. I suppose we got some vision of how that might come about today then?
Very much. That is one of the things that was very much, and there was a few more headlines that kept going across the bottom of the Reuters newswire there that did keep mentioning some of the mortgage funds, and I think that's why we sort of slipped on the close, because just a very uneasy feeling as to how we were feeling towards some of those. Also, as we look at things here, the crop ratings did not decrease yesterday, Todd, and still a ways away, and if we could get a few rain showers across the southern part of the Midwest and the Delta area, we could improve bean yields a little bit for that. So, that was one of the things. We just took off what we put on yesterday and a little bit of unsureness today. So, remember, Tuesday undoes Monday a lot of times.
So we lost 11 cents in the bean market for the August today, 15 and three quarters. Do you think, we often talk about $8 being a mark in the beans that doesn't stick around for very long, but we've been here for a little while now. Are we more likely to trade to the upside as we head to harvest time or to the downside, in your opinion?
I think we closed below some important points here today, below the 40 and 50-day moving average, Todd. I think that we're probably more in a sideways to down pattern for the next week or two here until we get things, or unless the weather changes and gets drier and hotter again that way. But if we could see a little rain and just the way things are for the moment until we can sort of get some early yields in, it looks to me like we're more in this sideways range than the up range in the beans.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks much. That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the closing market report. Happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. We're coming to you from Campus Town at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. Here's the weather forecast from the crack staff at WILL. They're calling tonight in the northern and central sections for mostly cloudy skies, a few showers and thunderstorms. In the southern sections, partly cloudy, a slight chance of a thunderstorm. Lows will range from 67 in the north to 79 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow in northern and central sections, partly sunny, some periods of showers, a few thunderstorms tomorrow. In the south, hot and humid, a slight chance of some thunderstorms. Highs will range from 83 near Lake Michigan to 100 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. And for the Champaign-Urbana area tomorrow, a high of 94, partly cloudy, hot and humid, chance of a thunderstorm there. High of 94, once again, the winds out of the south at 6 to 12 miles an hour. The heat index tomorrow in Champaign-Urbana, 100 during the afternoon. Coming to you from the State Fairgrounds this afternoon, and the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, Robert Easter, joins us this afternoon. Thanks for being with us, Bob. We appreciate it.
It's always good to be at the State Fair and have an opportunity to interact with many of the people that we're involved in supporting through our research, extension, and educational programs.
I want to talk about that, but I want to take you back just a bit because I want to go back to some of your specialty in animal sciences. You just returned not long ago from your annual trip to China, where you teach hog production to the Chinese. Can you tell me how their hog production has changed over the years, how well they have been adapting Western production methods, and whether you expect more hogs to come into confinement systems there in the future, and how that will impact grain production maybe here in the United States?
That's a full afternoon's conversation, but I'll try to deal with it quickly. I've been going to China for 20 years, and basically in support of marketing U.S. soybeans to the Chinese, the notion that if they develop a modern industry, they will inevitably need the soybean meal and corn to feed to their pigs. When I first started going there, China was producing half the pigs in the world, 400 million a year, and they still do that. They're the largest producer of pork in the world, and they eat all of that too, by the way. What's changing is their systems of production. Chinese food systems throughout their history were built around village markets. Somebody had a couple of pigs in their backyard, and some happy day they decided to harvest one of those pigs, and they would do that in the middle of the night, and by 4 o'clock in the morning it was for sale as meat in the market. With the growth of cities, the need is to organize a supply chain that takes animals halfway across the country and puts them in supermarkets, which are growing incredibly rapidly in that country, along with the capacity to buy meat in stores. So what we see now is the emergence of, if you will, modern systems, where you have an integration of production, 1 million head, 2 million head, with a harvesting, a slaughter facility, then taking that meat product through cold storage systems on into retail counters. At this point, that still probably doesn't account for more than 15 or 20% of their total production, but it's changing rapidly. And inevitably, those systems can't be based on grass and household scraps. They're based on modern feeding, and that has real opportunity for those who supply protein and cereal, corn, to feed pigs.
And your expectation would be that these would develop along the exterior of the country or along the coastline so that it would be useful for them or capable for them to be able to import corn and soybeans from the United States?
That's a real interesting question. The vast majority of Chinese people live along the coastlines because that is where the agriculturally rich areas are. And the early developments have indeed been along the coast, and it's now thousands of miles, so it's not a small area. The government is very interested in moving production of livestock inward and northward. The grain belt of China is the Manchuria, Heilongjiang, Jilin, those provinces far to the north. And their notion is that to move livestock production, just like we have done, out of cities and areas where there are concentrations of people into more agricultural areas. It makes a lot of sense environmentally because then you can recycle waste back into to crop production. And it's not going as fast as some might expect it to. There's a lot of reasons why, but it's a massive change. I think when that day comes, though, the rail system, the interior transport systems will be such that moving material from the ports into the inner areas won't be as difficult as we might imagine today.
Let's talk about the Illinois State Fairgrounds and the land-grant institution that the University of Illinois is, the agricultural needs that it services across the state of Illinois and across the globe. What's your vision for how the institution may adapt or change in the next 15 years?
The University of Illinois, since its inception in 1867, has been involved with this, if you will, land-grant university philosophy, and that is to a significant extent engaging with the needs of the state for education and also for research that supports economic development. Our sector is agriculture, and we appreciate that agriculture today, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and 15 years from now will be undergoing substantial change, not only in technology, but also in the structure and the nature of the business. And so our responsibility is to anticipate change, to do the research and do the education that prepares the next generation of agriculturalists and other participants in the chain, because it may start on the farm, but at some point it winds up in someone's fuel tank or on their plate. And there are a lot of participants in the food and fuel and agricultural supply chain.
Speaking of fuel, that's one of the places, I suppose, that the University of Illinois is now at the forefront of anticipation of the next generation of fuel, cellulosic fuel, that will come from miscanthus or other sources. We have the CABR, which is the Center for Agricultural and Bioengineering and Research, on campus. Are we really in a place now that Illinois, the University of Illinois, is set to lead the nation in its research on the cellulosic ethanol?
I think we're in a very good position, and the fact that we captured a major grant, as many would know from BP earlier this year, is an indication of that. We established the Center for Advanced Bioenergy Research earlier last year to in fact, give us a means of bringing together the expertise that we have. We have about 50 faculty in the college who in some way are engaged in scholarship around energy. It may be the genomics of cellulosic plants to make them fermentable. It may be agronomic practices to grow things, or it may be fermentation to produce fuel. But we're well positioned to be one of those who creates new paradigms for the country.
When you think about those new paradigms, will it simply be row crops for fuel, or will there be other paradigms that have to develop along the way? Will we need to change the way the engineering comes into the system? What are your expectations, and what's the university doing at this point?
I think the model we have currently is to use starch coming from corn, and that has certainly created an opportunity to be part of a fuel industry. The challenge is to think how we harvest more of the sun's energy and biomass and plant material and convert that into energy that can be used and to meet our national needs. And I think the kinds of programs that we're involved in, you mentioned Miscanthus, which is a grass that many would think is superior to switchgrass in terms of tonnage per acre. We're looking at the agronomic practices. How do we grow this? How do they harvest it? Big challenges when you start moving tons and tons per acre of biomass around the country to process it. And then how do you actually process it into fuel? We have research ongoing in all those fronts, and we've reached out to form collaborative relationships with others that are doing similar things. Chancellor Herman and I were in Brazil about 3 weeks ago. I spent some time at the University of Piracicaba, which is their top ag school, looking at what they're doing with sugarcane. Sure, we're not going to grow sugarcane in Illinois, but there's some lessons we can learn from how they're dealing with some of these issues of harvesting, transport, and processing.
Greg Knott has joined us. He's with the Center for Advanced Bioenergy Research at CABR. And we appreciate, by the way, Bob, you dropping by. I know you have a busy schedule, so thanks much, and you can get on your way. Greg is going to take us through a little bit more about the biotechnology and information that we have at CABR and what that entails here on campus. Greg, thanks for being here at the Illinois State Fair today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell me about CABR.
CABR was started really about the first of this year through the leadership of Dr. Hans Blaschek and Dean Bob Easter. There was kind of a perfect storm the last year or so with the biofuels industry and the College of Agriculture, Consumer Environmental Sciences, of course, wanted to be ready to respond and do what we've done well for over 100 years, and that's research. And as Dean Easter alluded to, there's a lot of new things coming down the pipe. And what CABR does is can really help facilitate actions throughout the campus community. It's really beyond the College of ACES. It's going to work with the entire campus. Some of the things we've started to do already is look at the a new building. The planning money was released from the state for the Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab. That lab will probably be located on the south part of campus. CABR's played an instrumental role in helping the design of that building. What that building is going to do is bring together different disciplines throughout the college and the campus and look at this question of how you convert biomass into fuels. There's, you know, much more than just ethanol coming down the road. There's butanol and other things. But there's a lot of research that's got to be done in the interim to how we're going to get there.
And those who want to learn more about that particular building, about CABR itself, have an opportunity on Thursday of this week during Agronomy Day. CABR will be on, I believe, Tour D as we go through the research plots at the South Farms. And what can they learn out while they're out on that tour site?
Well, at the early stage of the biofuels, what we saw was some basic education that's needed. What we put together is a flow chart that people, the farm community, can come out and take a look at and try to understand the full impact of the cycle of the biofuels production. In other words, how do you take a plant mass and convert it into a fuel that's put into your car? And I think what they'll learn some the basic concepts, some of the terms, and see really a flow, and they can pick up a flow chart that we're going to hand out that day. And at noon that day, Dr. Hans Blaschek, our center director, is really going to give a more in-depth presentation about that production cycle, and that's going to be at the noon hour. And I think that's going to be well attended. Hans is a world expert in butanol and fermentation, and so I think he's going to really shed a lot of light, but break it down into layman's terms so that we can all understand it.
Greg, we appreciate you being with us. Greg Knott is with the University of Illinois and CABR, which is the Center for Advanced Bioenergy and Research on the U of I campus. You can learn more about that on Agronomy Day, which is this Thursday, August the 16th. Kicks off at 7 a.m. in the morning. Fred Kolb, crop scientist at the University of Illinois, will be on site for Agronomy Day. He's here on site at the Illinois State Fairgrounds this afternoon. Not only can they learn about bioenergy and what the university is doing, and I think we have well over 50 or 60 faculty and staff members that are working on bioenergy or fuel from crops at this point, but they can learn a great deal more by talking to the researchers and scientists in crop sciences on Agronomy Day. What kind of tours might they be able to see if they come out on 7 o'clock on Thursday morning this week?
Well, as you mentioned, there are four tours and a lot of different topics covered, a lot of information on management, a lot of information on management of a lot of different pests. And in addition to the tours, there's also a lot of exhibits and tent displays that will be available from 7 o'clock right through noon or a little after noon.
I want to talk about something else beyond Agronomy Day, and I hope everybody gets the opportunity to come out and see that. I'll be dispatching the tour wagons into the South Farms. It kicks off at 7 o'clock in the morning Thursday on the South Farms Research Facility. That's not too far from the Assembly Hall on St. Mary's Road, just to the east of it. But, Fred Colt, you are also one of the people that's in charge of heading up recruitment for crop sciences. And we've been talking about this on the air maybe for 6 months or so about the idea that crop sciences, the practical side of science, really is in need of researchers and scientists and those who come through places like the University of Illinois Department of Crop Sciences and get a degree in crop sciences, a bachelor's of science. Tell me, how do you go about recruiting high schoolers? What are their opportunities once they arrive on campus?
Well, you're exactly right. There are lots of opportunities. We're going to have a display there geared toward recruiting students. And one of the things that people can do is if you know high school students who are interested in plants, science, and agriculture, if you can get their names and some contact information to us or encourage those students to consider enrolling in crop sciences at the University of Illinois, that would be a great help to us. And so we're going to have a display there at Agronomy Day. When students come to campus, in addition to the classes, which of course are important, there's also lots of opportunities for part-time jobs to work with researchers that are doing the research in these various areas. There's also lots of opportunities for internships during the summer, both with companies and also with faculty members. So there's just a whole lot of things that are available to students. And the good news is that when they finish, we do have lots of opportunities as well for jobs in the field.
And those jobs are well-paying jobs. What difference does it make when you have a sheepskin or when you graduate from the University of Illinois in agriculture as opposed to other places?
Well, obviously, we hope that the value is definitely very significant. I think that the University of Illinois is a great place to get an education, and I think that value translates into better salaries, better job opportunities, more internship opportunities, just lots of advantages. And you're right, the salaries coming out are very good. Our students have averaged several job offers when they graduate, and often in the last year or two, we've seen the average salary go from the low 40s to mid 40s.
Fred, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Fred Kolb is a crop scientist in the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, coming to you today from the Illinois State Fairgrounds. Back in 2 minutes with the agricultural news. Your regional forecast, or newscast rather, is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich plans to cut $500 million out of the state budget that lawmakers have approved and instead use the money to expand health care coverage for the uninsured. Blagojevich says there's $200 million in pork projects in the spending plan the legislature sent him last week after a summer-long overtime session. He plans to use his veto powers to cut $500 million, but didn't say what else he would cut besides the pet projects. He didn't take questions from reporters after making the comments outside his Springfield office this afternoon. Blagojevich says he'll use his executive power to give 500,000 more Illinois residents health insurance as part of his plan to create universal health care. The amended budget measure will go back to the state Senate first, where President Emil Jones says he will not move to override the governor. A Danville City Council member will seek the office being vacated by retiring State Representative Bill Black. In a press release, Republican Alderman Terry Baldwin says he plans to announce his candidacy for the 104th District race tomorrow morning. Black, also a Republican from Danville, announced last week that he'd be stepping down when his term expires at the start of 2009. A Michigan truck driver has been sentenced to 4 years in prison for causing a 2006 crash that killed five people from Taylor University, including two Illinois women. Robert Spencer was accused today of falling asleep. He was accused of falling asleep on Interstate 69 shortly before his tractor-trailer hit the university van. in April of 2006. A plan to place a corn processing plant in rural Piatt County has cleared its last hurdle. The county board this morning voted 5-1 to build the facility near White Heath. The plan has brought out protests from neighbors who object to odor and other pollution concerns. County board member John Lyons says those concerns will be addressed, citing a list of restrictions approved by the county's Zoning Board of Appeals last week. And Archer Daniels Midland has ended weeks of speculation, announcing it's locating a facility in the University of Illinois Research Park this fall. A press release did not indicate how many employees will work at the facility, but did indicate that the ADM Modeling Center will be used to collaborate U of I students and faculty. The company plans to hire 10 part-time student interns to collaborate with ADM researchers. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
I'm Todd Gleason, live coming to you from the Illinois State Fair on a very sultry afternoon. A bulletin, by the way, an excessive heat warning in effect for southwestern and portions of west central Illinois from today right on through Wednesday evening. Here to tell us more about that and heat across the Midwest as well as a little rainfall is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi to you, Don.
Hello there.
Tell me about the excessive heat in the south.
Well, it's certainly there and building, and it's got about 72 hours left in it. But then we're going to start to see some relief from this heat later this week and into the weekend. So some relief is on the way, but it's a couple days away.
And what kind of rainfall have we had across the Midwest in the last 24 hours?
Well, rainfall amounts have varied widely from a few tenths of an inch in some areas to areas in the sections of south central and southeast Minnesota that went over 2 inches. Across northern Illinois, anywhere from about 3/10 of an inch to 3/4 of an inch, but much lighter amounts in Iowa. The heavier stuff was up into Wisconsin and Minnesota.
I made note when I talked with Joe Persaki. I didn't talk with him. He actually left me a voicemail message with the Iowa crop weather update that they had a little more rainfall last week than usual on average across that state. And you just told us Minnesota had been doing fairly well in the rainfall category. Are they up back to normal at this point then?
Well, they need a little bit more to get them back to normal, but certainly the last week has helped out in Iowa, eastern Nebraska as well, and southern Minnesota.
What kind of rainfall can we expect over the next week for the Midwest?
Well, it's going to favor those northern areas. I would say that the central and northern half of Illinois, northern Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota, and eastern Nebraska, northern Missouri have the best chances of moisture. The southern areas are still going to be a little bit lacking, not getting as much, and that would include southern Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and then down into Missouri. They're going to be drier.
Indiana has suffered in particular, Indiana, Ohio, parts of the tri-state area up in the corner of Indiana and Ohio, northeast corner there of Indiana. Is there any relief on the way there at any point?
I think central and northern Indiana have got a really good chance of picking up some rain with this next batch of showers and thunderstorms over the next 48 to 72 hours. Some of that will bleed over into far western areas of Ohio, but central, northern, and eastern Ohio and far southern Indiana are likely going to miss out on the better rain.
And finally, check in on the Chinese corn and soybean crop for me, please.
They're looking at near normal to slightly above normal temperatures over most of China. The best rains will be in the central, southern, and far eastern areas of China. The western areas a bit drier.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Don Deo is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason at the Illinois State Fair this afternoon in Campus Town. A couple more hours here. If you'd like to drop by and see us, please do so. Our thanks, by the way, go today to Dave Dickey, your Director of Ag Programming, for manning the board back at the radio station. Thanks much, Dave. We appreciate that. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.